Welcome back. Would you patronize legal recreational cannabis businesses if they opened in this region? Let's know. 4 years ago, D.C.'s council legalized possession of recreational marijuana, but Congress prevented D.C. from creating any system to tax and regulate it. The exchange of marijuana then fell into a legal gray area where people gifted pot instead of selling it. Now, with D.C. missing out on millions in potential tax revenues, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser announced last week that she would launch another effort to tax and regulate cannabis. But what would that look like? Joining me in studio is Rachel Kirk. She is a senior editor of DCist. Rachel, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Last week, Mayor Muriel Bowser gave a press conference where she said she'd be introducing new legislation for taxing and regulating marijuana in the coming year. Why now?
So this conference came right after Election Day, and what we found out right afterwards was that Democrats were going to be taking over the House of Representatives.
Sheriff in town.
Yes, exactly. A new boss who doesn't exactly look like the old boss. And basically what that means for D.C. residents is that it was Republicans in the House who have prevented D.C. from being able to create this regulation scheme through what's called a budget rider. Basically, they put something in a much larger must-pass bill that says that D.C. cannot spend any of its city money trying to come up with a scheme to make recreational marijuana legal for sale in the district. And leaders of the Democratic Party have indicated that once they take control, they're going to get rid of those riders. So for these new appropriation bills that come out in about a year, we'll no longer have those riders, meaning that the city will be able to then really noodle over what recreational sale of marijuana would look like. In D.C., as you know, it's already legal to grow marijuana in D.C. up to an amount, to possess it, to gift it, which has created a kind of odd gray economy, as you mentioned, in which there are all of these businesses that ostensibly sell lemonade or t-shirts or something else and then give you weed. So there are ways that you could say use your phone and procure marijuana, but not in a way that the city can tax. And that may change in the
coming
year.
Mayor did not offer any details about her tax and regulation scheme, but there's already legislation that Councilmember David Grosso has proposed around licensing. What does that look like?
Yes, and at-large Councilmember Grosso has proposed this legislation multiple times. And in the past when he's proposed it, he's basically said, look, I know that moving forward with discussing taxing and regulating weed would be against federal law, but I think we ought to do it anyway because this is the will of the people. And what licensing distributors would actually look like in D.C. would depend very much on holding a public hearing, which the Attorney General of D.C. has determined under the current law is illegal. So in other states, for instance, they have sales taxes ranging from 15% to 37%, or a mixture of sales taxes and excise taxes. And basically all of that is on the table for D.C. to discuss as soon as it's legal for their elected officials to have that conversation.
And when would that happen? When will it be legal?
Well, the earliest it could potentially happen would be in December. This appropriations bill is going up for another conversation. And Eleanor Holmes Norton, D.C.'s delegate, says that because Republicans will still be in control at that time, it's unlikely that that rider will go away. So in that case, the earliest we're really looking at is October of next year.
October of 2019. Also joining me in studio is Adam Eidinger. He is co-founder of DCMJ, and he's social director of Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps. Adam, good to see you again.
Happy to be here.
You've advocated for cannabis legalization for many years. What do you think about the timing of Mayor Bowser's proposal?
I think she was trying to change the subject after her independent candidate for DC Council failed to win. And why not? She rode this issue to popularity in her first election. She just got reelected, and I think it's a good way to kick off her second term is to let everyone know that she's going to see this through to adult sales. I'd rather use that term than recreational because we're not water skiing after all. I think she's really wise to start the conversation and to change the subject.
And are you on board?
I'm definitely on board. I mean, I think she should go to every ward in the city and host a town hall and listen to people. Just listen. Don't offer any proposals for the next 10 months And after you've gone to every ward in the city and had some time to think about it, then come up with a proposal. Because I think we need to have to craft something that's unique to the District of Columbia. We're not like another place in the United States. And frankly, everyone's talking about pot shops. I don't even appreciate the framing of that. We should be selling it at Whole Foods and Amazon. We should be selling it and any retailer who wants to get the license. Currently, it's very easy to sell cigarettes or alcohol in the city. If you want to sell it. And yeah, it's available throughout the city, but I shouldn't have to get on the metro or take a cab to get it. And if I want to have it delivered, I should be able to get it delivered. So there's a lot of different ways to do this business and a lot of different ways to tax it. And it's got to be appropriate to the District of Columbia.
Well, I know Will Jones disagrees with you on that, but he seemed to be nodding in agreement when you said the mayor should go to every ward in the city and have hearings on this. Will Jones is Communications and Outreach Associate for Smart Approaches to Marijuana. He joins us in studio. Will, good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks. Yeah.
You and your organization oppose legalization. What do you think is the possibility that cannabis can be distributed legally in the district?
I think if we do have these hearings, the mayor's going to hear a lot different conversation than we've heard in the past with the legalization. Most people supported legalization because nobody wants anybody to go to jail for smoking a joint. That's, you know, that's not something that should happen. And really the way the initiative was presented was that was the goal of it, to stop arrests for marijuana use. And I think hopefully everyone in the city would be on board with that. But what we're talking about now is pot shops. And, you know, what I tell people all the time is the closest store to my house in any direction, if I walk out the front door, go any direction, the closest store is a liquor store. If I go a little bit farther from that store, maybe it'll be a convenience store, but it's going to be so covered with advertisements for tobacco, for alcohol, for the lottery, that I'm not even going to be able to see inside that store. And I don't think people are going to be excited about having pot shops coming to their neighborhood. And we've seen that the history of recreational drug industries is that they disproportionately target communities of color. We say we're going to regulate marijuana like alcohol, but that actually concerns me where I live, because I hate what we've done with alcohol. Again, you see it on every other corner. And if we look at what's happened in Denver, Colorado, it has followed that same pattern where they have one pot shop for every 47 residents in communities of color. They have more pot shops than Starbucks and McDonald's combined. That's not the future that I want for my neighborhood and for the city.
Also joining us in studio is Lisa Scott. She is the founder of DC Cannabis Business Association. Lisa Scott, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Mayor Bowser has called the current status quo of cannabis in the district untenable. Do you agree?
No, of course not.
You work in the cannabis industry. What kind of plan would you want to see the mayor and council work out for legalized distribution?
Well, I actually want her to focus on the DC council, and when they make the legislation, to focus on allowing and only allowing local business entrepreneurs to get into the business. The people who have been here and been chomping at the bit, you know, trying to get into the business, but we can't, are waiting for this to happen. And we don't want outside people to come in with their deep pockets and just take over.
Adam, are people still being arrested in Washington for smoking weed? What do you know about who is being arrested and under what circumstances?
Well, about 2 months ago, I guess, Mayor Bowser instructed the chief of police to basically stop arresting people for public smoking, even though that's what the statute says, and instead get them to self-arrest, if you will, within 2 weeks by turning themselves into the police station, getting booked, paying a $25 post and forfeit, and then it's disposed of. You don't have a court date. You could go to court if you want to go to court. So really, we've stopped arresting people for public smoking because we had something like 450 people arrested in the past year for public smoking. We used to have as many as 5,700 people a year arrested for cannabis-related crimes. So we've seen like a dramatic reduction in arrests thanks to Initiative 71. And that was the voters who made that happen with 70% agreeing. Now I think, you know, this next phase of sale of like for-profit businesses, Lisa's absolutely right. We need to reward the local businesses first. I would start actually with the medical dispensaries. They currently offer cannabis to about 5,000 registered patients in the city. Why can't they sell to adults right now? I mean, this would make sense after the passage of Initiative 71. And by the way, those dispensaries, they waited a year and a half longer than the original projected timeline by the DC Council and lost millions of dollars in, you know, rent that was paid with no income coming in, and they're all in deep debt right now. So if we flip the switch and then leave these original entrepreneurs, many of which are local business people, out in the cold, that's not right. So I think we're going to have to phase in the adult sales. Maybe in the first year, it's just those medical dispensaries that get to sell to adults. And then the second year, we have issue a ton of licenses. And by the third year, you're going to Whole Foods to buy cannabis. And it's actually not a pot shop. It's just a shop that sells everything else. It sells food. It sells alcohol. I don't like going to five different stores to buy things. Gas stations are not told they can only sell gas after all. I mean, they sell everything else at a gas station. So, I mean, why not sell cannabis at a gas station? That's what I'm trying to get at here. Is like, this is getting silly. You go to a farmer's market in D.C., people like Lisa are there. All right, I'm not saying Lisa. I'm saying people like Lisa. And it's happening out in the open, and nobody wants that person to go to jail, but they're not paying taxes. So let's get some tax revenue, too.
So we're talking about prioritizing local businesses. But Will Jones, you've been critical of the idea that cannabis legalization will benefit African Americans, and you're not particularly sure that it's going to go to local businesses. But first, why do you think it will not benefit African Americans?
The funding for a lot of legalization initiatives and a lot of what's happening around the country and even the world right now is from big tobacco and big alcohol, honestly. Over the past year, over $4 billion has been invested by the top liquor companies. I'm talking about Corona, Molson Coors in Canada, and Heineken. They've heavily invested, especially since it's legal now in Canada, in the cannabis industry. And that's because they've been waiting for federal legalization. Now, when it looks like it's getting a little bit closer, especially what's happened in Canada, they're able to invest. They're not going to do it until it's legal everywhere. But these are really the people that are going to be controlling the industry. And again, when I see these liquor stores, you know, in our neighborhood, which are, you know, these huge companies are heavily advertising in our neighborhoods, that's unfortunately going to be the future of cannabis. Again, that's over $4 billion in the past year invested by alcohol industries. That's not counting about Big Tobacco, who's also invested in that. And it's very telling that John Boehner, former Republican Speaker of the House, is now leading the cannabis commercialization industry. If you listen to the American Cannabis Summit that just happened this past year, he said, I've been on the board of these big tobacco companies because he's a lobbyist for them. And he says, we're going to get in the industry. He says, as soon as we can, we're going to get in the industry. And there's already been investments from like Philip Morris, R.J. Reynolds, and Winston and Kool Cigarettes. So this is what's going to be controlling the industry at the end of the day.
Let me talk to Eric and Bethesda first. But you keep making the comparisons between marijuana, cigarettes, and alcohol. The latter two have been proven by the medical community to be hazardous to our health. I don't think that's the case with marijuana. You seem to think that marijuana should fall into the same category as alcohol and cigarettes. Why?
So addiction is not good for anyone's health. And there are health risks associated with it. We're not saying that it's necessarily on the level of alcohol. The way it interacts with your body is different. There are certain mental health risks that come from heavy use of marijuana, particularly when you start at a young age. And so there's also, you know, the risk of drug driving, which has increased in states that have legalized. So there are many health risks associated with it. Is it exactly like alcohol? No. Is it exactly like tobacco? No. But there's a host of health issues, again, associated with marijuana use. Not everyone gets them, but they are there, and those will increase as more and more people use them.
I guess we'll hear a little bit more about that shortly, but Eric in Bethesda wants to talk about this from a supply and demand perspective. Eric in Bethesda, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's for the man from Smart. I was also reacting to all this comparison. It seems like a big part of your argument is you just don't want to see marijuana as publicly as you currently see liquor stores. They're ubiquitous. But the reason they're ubiquitous is there's a heavy demand for them. And I don't think it's up to us to regulate whether people want something that's legal. It's up to us to say it's legal. And if a business wants to sell it legally and people want to buy it legally, they get to open a store and make money doing that. That's
Will Jones?
Part of being America.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, and again, it's legal here in D.C., so if you want to grow it, if you want to smoke it, if you want to share it, that's perfectly fine, and that's America. Great. You do you. But we don't have to allow an industry to sell something and to market something that has been shown to have negative public health consequences. And so when we're looking at marijuana, that's what we're talking about. This is not about personal use. This is about, should we allow an industry, a huge industry, to market this? And you're saying so many people want this. This is why it's on, you know, every other corner or whatnot. Again, I want to point out that in communities of color, there are 8 times as many liquor stores in our communities, according to some studies, as in other places. And that's because they create demand, which demand for these types of industries. It's easier to do it in disenfranchised communities where people don't have as many resources to combat addiction, where people don't have as many resources to educate themselves about the potential negative health consequences.
But you're comparing apples and oranges here. You're talking about alcohol and tobacco, we're talking about
addiction
cannabis.
Can happen through these
addiction,
things,
okay,
so we're
there,
talking
there's
about
no
industry again.
There's no one in, no evidence that people are overdosing from cannabis, for example. We have
or
tons
cigarettes.
Of evidence from, no, cigarettes are killing
overdose on
hundreds
cigarettes.
Of thousands of people a year. That's
right.
Well
so
documented.
A different type of health consequence.
Yeah, but.
Right, so there's health consequences with marijuana.
The,
I'm not saying
what are they? You haven't listed them.
Okay,
you're
so
just saying,
drug
you're just comparing it to other
yeah,
things.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, so drug driving for one, that's a huge concern, especially in D.C.
Okay,
we want to have zero fatalities.
We have not had
so if we
increased
look at
fatalities
states,
in D.C. since legalization
so
on the roads.
If we look at, but if we look at states that have the commercial industry, right? And I think D.C.'s okay right now, honestly, because we don't have it massively marketed. But if we look at the states that do have it massively marketed, like Colorado, Washington State, Oregon, we have seen an increase in fatalities from drug driving and
we've seen an increase of admitted drug driving. We've not seen an increase in fatalities. I think you're confusing.
Here is Lisa Scott.
Well, I also have a company called Bud Appetit, and I have created this company because I had a lot of people requesting to take cannabis in an edible form and not smoking, because I'm not a smoker, and I know that a lot of people want to have it for health benefits because their doctor gives them all these pain meds, and they come to me and they're like, I don't want to take these pain meds, and can you do something for it? And I have a variety of items for what so many different issues that people can take, and instead of being hooked on opioids, which is a huge epidemic, as you know, as everyone knows, this is an exit way from opioid addiction. And a lot of people really, really need this as a health benefit and not detriment.
Rachel Curtis, I'm assuming that Mira Bowser did not address any of this in her press conference on this issue, but I guess during the course of the rollout, we'll be hearing more.
Yes, that's true. And the health department under Bowser about 2.5 years ago did recommend a tax and regulate scheme. So though they weren't able to implement it at the time, the health department does seem to be behind it. The other thing I wanted to bring up with respect to who is going to be allowed to participate in this economy is, and this is going to be a question for the DC Council, is who's going to be allowed to get a license, right? I think that in some states, what we've seen, and even among the legalization of medical use, is that people who had participated in marijuana sales when it had been illegal were frozen out of the market, whereas DC could potentially implement it differently, right? People who had potentially sold weed and were punished for that could find a way to be a part of this economy in a legal form. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the council tackles that issue.
We've got to take a short break, but 2 years ago, the Oakland City Council created the Equity Permit Program, which allows recently released offenders and residents of East Oakland the opportunity to receive medical cannabis industry permits. It's considered a form of economic reparations to even the recreational cannabis playing field for people whose lives and neighborhoods have been impacted by the war on drugs. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picoult and Jennifer Finney Boylan. followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We've been talking about the future of legal marijuana in D.C. And Lisa Scott, I was talking about the program in Oakland that was created called the Equity Permit Program, which I explained just before the break. Is there any kind of local push to do anything similar to that in Washington?
Well, I do believe that the mayor, she created this program called A Fair Shot. And that was to help improve minorities in the city to get housing and to open up small businesses and everything like that. And of course, she couldn't include the cannabis business in there, but I think that it should be included. And they could actually, when they issue the licenses and they grade everyone who puts in an application, that they could put a waiver for anyone who did have a charge or was arrested for cannabis, for any kind of nonviolent kind of cannabis
offense,
right.
Here is Cecilia in D.C. Cecilia, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm really excited about this conversation and really appreciative that it's happening here. And I love the conversation about how regulation would intersect with criminal justice reform potentially. And I think it's really cool to hear about how other cities like Oakland are doing it. And I definitely think that there's room in D.C. for some sort of similar legislation to be adopted or a similar program to exist. One of the things I wanted to add is that I think that cannabis and the regulation of it could be really interesting for D.C.'s creative economy. I'm unfamiliar with your business, Lisa, Bon Appetit, but I'm definitely going to look into it. And it's just, it all sounds really exciting and like a really great opportunity for local artists and culinary people to get involved in that and bring that ingredient into their repertoire. And I think that also what would happen with regulation is just folks would start using cannabis correctly. Cannabis can have really wonderful benefits for health. I watched my father with cancer thrive because of edibles, basically, while he was undergoing really extensive radiation and chemotherapy. And if people know how to use it, and if they're using it in proper ways, and dosage is done correctly, and they know which strains will lead to which experiences, and if people just kind of get out of this, like, behind the veil of ignorance, I think it could be really beneficial for everyone, really.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Cecilia. Here is Nick in Washington, D.C. Nick, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to, like, hats off. There's two real leaders in cannabis and legalization in D.C., Adam Eininger, thank you so much. Wayne Turner, who in the late 90s did the medical marijuana initiative for the ballot. That was just real leadership that we needed from both of you. Thank you. Thanks. There's also a public health component. I walked down, I saw it on 8th Street Southeast. There were six people one day, maybe 2 months ago, just wiped out from this K2 spice, this illegal marijuana knockoff. And there were a line of paramedics dealing with them. This is also, you know, when you can give access to something legal, something that's not going to, you know, knock you over, potentially kill you, it's going to have a benefit to taxpayers.
Nick, I think, and thank you for your call and your praise of Adam, but I think that Vince in Silver Spring has a slightly different view. Vince, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Coach. I appreciate that. Just wanted to weigh in. One of your guests, I didn't catch his name, but he seems to be arguing that there are no bad side effects to using medical marijuana or recreational. And I just think that's a really disingenuous argument. I've worked with a lot of students who I've just seen totally derail any potential they had by basically smoking weed all the time. And I know, you know, kids will do that anyway. So that's not to argue that legalization will help or hurt that. But just to say it's a harmless drug, I think, is really disingenuous. I've also had coworkers who've just derailed.
Adam Eininger respond to that.
Well, I'm talking about overdose potential. I do agree that cannabis use, especially by teenagers or people that are, you know, in their early 20s, is unwise. I think that we should be taking a big chunk of the potential tax revenue that's going to come in from adult sales and use for education campaigns to discourage underage use of cannabis as well as alcohol and tobacco, which we've seen to great success with tobacco, which is highly addictive. We've been able to reduce teen use over the last 25 years. I mean, compared to when I was in high school, it seemed like half the students were smoking cigarettes. Now it's just about 10% that are using cigarettes because of education. We need to do the same thing with cannabis. But I think it is the safest substance that's used for people to relax or to change their state of mind of all the substances that are out there.
How do you use it?
And it should never. I smoke it, and I occasionally use edibles. I vape occasionally, but I generally like to smoke it.
How does it affect your function?
Well, I have arthritis, so I'm getting some relief from that. But it also lifts my mood. It gives me a better attitude about maybe a long day ahead of work. I mean, I just spent the last week living on the National Mall doing an event, and we were up all night building this site and breaking it down, and leaving the site, using cannabis, coming back to the site kept me alert and happy. But yeah, I'm 45 years old and I can dance all night. So it's clearly not bringing me down.
Will Jones, your organization opposes what you mentioned here before called Big Marijuana. What do you mean by that? And if DC launched a tax and regulate plan for cannabis, where do you think Big Marijuana would factor into it?
So again, what we mean by that is the big investors that are now looking at legal marijuana industry. We're seeing examples of that in Canada, and then we see like reserve, you know, domain names and brand names that are happening even in the United States as people are poised, hoping that it's legalized at the federal level. And so again, I mentioned earlier $4 billion invested by some of the top alcohol industries over the past year. Big Marijuana, we're also referring to people like John Boehner, who is now, again, one of the leading lobbyists for commercialization in the United States, former Republican Speaker of the House, and he was a lobbyist for Big Tobacco.
Inveterate cigarette smoker.
Yes, yes. And so this, when we're talking about Big Marijuana, these are the companies, the individuals that we have in mind. And honestly, once these players get involved, they have the money to fund lobbyists.
We don't have a lot of time left yet. But Lisa Scott, how do you keep them out? What does the legal cannabis community look like in Washington? And how do you respond to Will's critiques of Big Marijuana taking over the industry?
Well, I think that it's all going to be based on consumer choice. Right now, people can buy alcohol from a liquor store, a grocery store, a farmer's market. They can do the home brews. People can brew alcohol and wine and beer. And there's small businesses, or there's really micro businesses. And the same thing can happen with cannabis. There's people that grow so many different varieties and strains.
Adam, how would you like to see the permitting process go forward?
Wow. Well, actually, I feel like I still need to ask the community what they want to see to have like a strong opinion. But I think we need a licensing for home cultivators to be able to sell to their friends and family. A limited amount.
I would like it to be. We should be allowed to have like co-ops, like community gardens, mm-hmm. where people who live in apartments or in a house that they don't have space to grow or a yard, they can make a community garden. It could be even indoor in a warehouse, and they can have a co-op. They can portion it off, and everyone contributes to that location.
But it's clear that Mayor Bowser will be hearing a lot of different opinions about this. Rachel Curzius. Rachel is senior editor of DCS. Rachel, thank you for joining us. Will Jones is Communications and Outreach Associate for Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Will, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Adam Eidinger is co-founder of DCMJ, Social Action Director of Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps. Adam, always a pleasure. Mm-hmm. And Lisa Scott is founder of DC Cannabis Business Association. Lisa, thank you for joining.
Thank you so much.
Today's show about taxing and regulating cannabis was produced by Mark Gunnery. Today's update on Amazon's HQ2 location in Northern Virginia was produced by Ruth Tam. Coming up tomorrow, are there losers in Amazon's reality show style search for a second headquarters? We'll talk to economic leaders in DC and Montgomery County about what they missed out on and what they can still gain from Amazon choosing Virginia. Plus, we look into Virginia's expansion of Medicaid. That's tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Nam.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, Margaret Barthel, and Lauren Marco. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schrobstorf. Our intern is Talia Drayton. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, go to kojoshow.org.
Don't
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.